We're going to go first now to the Washington, D.C. area, Ken Timmerman. He looks at geopolitical activities for us around the world. We need to stay on top of what is going on, so we call upon Ken. He's an international journalist. He's an international traveler. He's also running for the lieutenant governor in the state of Maryland, and he's just a busy man all the time. Writing a book is just about to be published. We'll try to get him to give us some insight into the book when it is on in the marketplace upcoming real soon. But Ken, first we want to use your great intellect to talk about some details behind the headlines. For example, this week, Iran's supreme leader, the Ayatollah, said jihad, and that's holy war, will continue until the United States is no more. That sounds like a threat to me.
I think the Iranians are increasingly feeling their oats, if you will. Perhaps they're feeling their nuclear isotopes. As they get closer to a nuclear weapons capability and perhaps the ability to field an arsenal, a small arsenal of nuclear weapons, they are becoming increasingly aggressive in their rhetoric and in their actions. I thought these particular comments by Ayatollah Khamenei were very interesting, actually, because he essentially also declared an end to the negotiations over Iran's nuclear program with the United States and the West. And that has been, you know, what the Obama administration has been focusing on. They've been claiming these negotiations as a great victory of diplomacy. And Khamenei is simply saying, well, that was yet another effort to buy time. We bought some time. The negotiations are over. And he condemns the people inside Iran, and that would include the president, the new president, Hassan Rouhani, who had been promoting these negotiations. So I think this is a pretty significant statement, and I'm glad that my friend Reza Khalili, who was a CIA agent inside the Revolutionary Guards in Iran for a number of years before coming out in around 2000, I'm glad that he published this in the Daily Caller.
Absolutely. That is very important information for all of us to have. Couple of very important elections taking place this last week, one in the European Union and then in the Ukraine as well. Now, in light of the election in the Ukraine, looks like Russia says they're ready to have a conversation with this new Ukrainian president and see how can they work things out. Is that really going to happen, or is that total PR?
Well, I think it is likely to happen. Poroshenko is a billionaire industrialist, somebody who has come to the forefront in the Ukrainian economy. He has not been pro-Russian per se in his program. Both he and his main rival in the Ukrainian election, the former Prime Minister Tymoshenko, they both pledged that they would sign an agreement with the European Union, which is what actually sparked the Ukrainian crisis to begin with earlier this year. So he's not known as being pro-Russian, but the Russians see him as somebody who they can talk with because he is engaged in business. He is very close to another very wealthy Ukrainian in the gas business, Dmitry Firtash. They, while not being pro-Russian again, they're Ukrainian patriots, they believe that they need to engage in a direct dialogue with the Russians. And now the Russians seem ready to do so. That, I think, is a positive step, and we'll need to keep watching to see where this goes.
Well, we indeed will have to keep on top of this because it is a very important story as it relates to the European Union and Russia as well. One more elections I would like you to comment on. I'll talk with David Dolan, who does our Middle East news updates for us, because of the effect on Israel that the elections in Egypt will have. But what about al-Sisi? You and I have had conversation about al-Sisi before, a military leader who has now been elected president in a landslide. What are your thoughts?
Well, he was elected in a landslide, but the Egyptians are a little bit embarrassed by the unexpectedly low turnout. The numbers that we've seen, around 46% of the voters turned out to vote. It may just be that they figured he was going to win by such a large margin, there wasn't any point. But, you know, that was less than they had been hoping. They'd been hoping that he would be, you know, broadly acclaimed by the Egyptian people. Now, this said, you know, 46%, We have primary elections in the United States, and I myself will be in a primary election on June 24th in Maryland for the governor's race, where 20% or 25 at most percent of the registered voters come out to vote. So, you know, we shouldn't be casting stones at the Egyptians for having a low turnout when our own elections here in the United States don't attract very many voters.
Speaking of elections, we have a United States Congress elected every 2 years, the House of Representatives at least, and they have just warned the White House that the Saudis were going to turn to Pakistan for a nuclear weapon should the White House allow Iran to develop their nuclear weapon of mass destruction. This looks like a nuclear race in the Middle East to me.
Absolutely, Jimmy. This warning was issued by Eliana Rose-Leighton, somebody I've gotten to know over the years. She was the chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. It's now chaired by Ed Royce from California. She's a Cuban-American. She has been a real staunch defender of our freedoms and very much on top of, or at the forefront, I should say, of the fight to keep the Islamic Republic of Iran in the box so they could not acquire nuclear weapons capability. I think what she has pointed out here is something many of us have been worried about for a long, long time, and the Saudis have been publicly warning us as well. If we don't take care of the Islamic Republic of Iran, if we don't prevent them from acquiring nuclear weapons capability, the Saudis, with their mega billion dollars in assets and gold reserves, and will go where they need to go, do what they need to do to defend themselves, which means for them to acquire nuclear weapons, probably from Pakistan. This is something that's been in the cards for years and years. Everybody has been watching it who watches the region. The Pakistanis obviously are eager for the money. They probably have anywhere from 60 to 100, some estimates say as many as 200 nuclear weapons in Pakistan. So they certainly have the warheads that they could sell to the Saudis. This is a real serious problem. And what it really shows, Jimmy, is that the United States under Barack Obama has given such, has portrayed such an image of weakness that even our ostensible allies in the region, Saudi Arabia, and to a lesser extent Pakistan, feel that they can defy us publicly. That, I think, is the biggest takeaway from this. It's one of the big lessons in my new book, Dark Forces, on Benghazi, is that a weak president, a vacuum of U.S. leadership, only invites the bad guys to come out to play.
Well, I can't hardly wait for that book to come out, Ken, and we're looking forward to the time when we can have a preview of what the book's about and offer it right here on Prophecy Today. Well, let's get to a couple of other issues that I wanted to discuss with you before we conclude our conversation. I sent you an article about the Bilderbergers. They're holding a conference, and some are calling it a conspiracy. Now, I don't know if you know anything about the Bilderbergers. Is it a conspiracy, or is it just the elite of the world trying to get together and put some type of strategy together?
Jimmy, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. Having worked in political campaigns and having seen how government works, I can tell you it's hard enough when you have three people in a room to decide on a policy. So here are meetings where you have world leaders from across the world, people in the banking business, people in industry, political leaders, government leaders coming together to discuss the world's problems. I don't see a conspiracy here at all. It would be hard enough to get them to agree on anything whatsoever. Nevertheless, the fact that these meetings have been held in secret for so many years has obviously fueled the conspiracy theorist, and anything that is conducted behind closed doors tends to get people's imaginations going. But I don't think this is a conspiracy. This is just one of those elitist meetings. You have the same thing going on at Davos every year, the World Economic Forum. You know, while some people do believe that that too is a conspiracy, again, these are elite forums where leaders from different walks of life get together to discuss the world's problems, to see if they have any common ground, and to discuss future scenarios and technologies.
Well, I've got to say that Judy and I have lived in Jerusalem for 23 years, And the statement there is, get two Jews together and you have three opinions. So that is probably the philosophy that you're explaining to us. Ken Timmerman with a look at geopolitical activities happening across this world, so needed as we do look at current events in light of biblical prophecy. Ken, thank you so very much, my good friend. Looking forward to that book coming out. We'll talk again next week.
Thank you so much, Jimmy. God bless.